Selective service is something that here in Minnesota, anyway, is automatic. When you turn 18, you're automatically registered for selective service for the draft. I believe this happens when you register to vote for your first time. Well, there is some scuttlebutt about ladies now being included in the draft. So today we're going to spend some time talking about this predicament. And hopefully it'll spark some good conversation amongst you, the audience. Because I have a pretty interesting take on it. Maybe it's interesting, maybe not. Maybe others think the same way, or maybe others will think I'm a complete dummy. But anyway, that's today's conversation. So sit back and don't go away, because we start now. Hey, everybody, and welcome here to another installment of the Richard Leonard Show. And, of course, I want to say thank you for being here. So thank you for being here. If you are returning, thanks for coming back. If it's your first time, thanks for checking us out. I think it's important to mention also that we strive here to bring you meaningful content and further some of the narratives that you may hear elsewhere in the mainstream media or otherwise. But certainly, we like to bring you things that you will not hear in the mainstream media or otherwise. But before we get started on today's conversation, I know that you won't let me go on without telling you about how this show is made possible. And that is Cortez Wealth Management. Get yourselves on over to AmericaFirstRetirementPlan.com. Check out their website. Sign up for the webinars. They happen on Tuesday and Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Go through the whole spiel, the whole ordeal. Collect all the information that Carlos Cortez and his staff have to provide you. And check it out. Think on it. If you have any comments, questions, or concerns, please feel free to reach out to them. That's what they're there for. They want to help you navigate this process, the process of designing yourself a tax-free retirement plan. So get on over there, AmericaFirstRetirementPlan.com. Check them out and give Carlos and his staff a call after you've received the information. That's the next step, you know. AmericaFirstRetirementPlan.com. Get on over there, register, check it out. Okay, so the draft. The draft is something that has not been enacted in 50-ish years, but it is something that is talked about all the time. Maybe not out in the open, but it's talked about every year, because anytime any American man, boy, turns 18, they are required to register for selective service, which means in the event that the United States of America institutes a draft to fill its ranks of the military, you must have registered. It is your civic obligation to this country to register for the draft. Now, recently, with all of the BS going on all over this world, and all the things that we as a country are involved in, the draft is something that has been talked about a whole lot more in a whole lot more circles, in a whole lot more places, especially in different halls of government. Now, you'll hear a lot of politicians say things like, well, you know, we haven't had a draft in 50 years, so maybe that's something that we can by all means keep on the table, but let's put it to the side of the table, the way side of the table, because we're not going to need to deal with that right now. And maybe that's true. But the other part of this conversation is that in some new legislation that was written by the House recently, they talk about now including women. So anybody in this country who is a United States citizen who turns the age of 18 and is younger than the age of 26 or 27, I suppose, because the age range is 18 to 26 years old, must register for Selective Service. Now, they're talking about in next year's National Defense Authorization Act to include women into that, which would mean that, ladies, when you turn 18 and you are between the age of 18 to 26, you must now register for Selective Service. And should our country go to war and need to fill the ranks of its military organizations, you could be called into service. Now, this legislation that was written explains the draft operating in this way. Well, and it's not the legislation, it's the actual website that talks about Selective Service and a draft should it be necessary. And what they say is that should the draft come upon us, they will take individuals who are 20 years old. If you have turned 20 years old or are turning 20 years old, the year in which they initiate the draft, you will be amongst the first to be called into service. And then it goes up the ladder, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, and of course 26. And if by the time we get through all the 26-year-olds in this country, and we still need more people, then they will go back down to the 18, 19, and back to the 20s, I guess. And if we get that far, if we get that far and we still need to fill our ranks with people, we got a serious problem. I imagine that'll be the time when the government puts out a call to action, calling to veterans of this country to dust off your old footlocker, grab your gear, and come on over to whatever muster point they decide, because we need you. And I think that that necessarily would not be a horrible thing. I think that you would have a lot of middle-aged men who have served this country who are feeling some type of way about the direction in which this country is going or has been going. And they would gladly strap up their boots, load a weapon, and stand a post. But they shouldn't need to. They shouldn't need to, for the most part. All those men and women have already fulfilled their commitment to their country. They've already fulfilled their civic duty to this country, of their own free will, mind you. But let's talk about this. Let's talk about women. Women in the draft. There are many people that are saying, I would never want my daughter to be drafted. I never want my granddaughter to be drafted. And I agree with that. I would never want my son to be drafted against his will. If he doesn't want to serve, I would not want him to have to serve. None of them. None of the four of our boys. But the fact of the matter is this. If we are a country of people who truly hold the idea of this country at the top of our priority list, and ensuring that the ideas that were laid out by our founding fathers, the ideas and the rules and regulations, or whatever you want to call it, the stipulations of everything that was laid out in those documents that govern this country, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, well, then maybe it's necessary. And maybe it's not something that we really have a say in. Not if we want to keep this country or whatever's left of it prosperous and strong. Not if we want to say that we are a group of people, a society, a country of people that are willing to fight for our home. And so this might be a problem. This might be a problem for our younger generations, because it seems as if those ideas don't really ring true for them. And I would say that for many of them, maybe it's an issue of education. Maybe it's an issue that they don't exactly know what all those ideas and all those stipulations are. That's completely possible, in my opinion. But what do we do about it? I think that if the draft were to come back, me personally, I don't see any problem with women being drafted. If this is an issue of, do we put women in right into combat roles? I think that that is something that needs to be part of the discussion. I would argue that there are also men who probably shouldn't be in combat roles either. And so part of this discussion came up some years ago when I was still in the military, and they were going to now allow females to join the ranks of combat MOSs, such as the infantry, the field artillery, things of that nature. And we were asked by our leadership how we felt about it. I can remember the commander sitting all the men in the unit down in the chow hall and just asking us straight out. The government has said that we are going to now allow women into combat roles, such as the infantry. We were all infantrymen. What do you guys think? And there was a mixed bag of answers. Some guys were saying, hell no, no way. Some people didn't mind. Some people said, yeah, absolutely, let them in. And my take on it was this. I kind of feel the same way about it as I do with gay people in the military. I don't give a shit. I don't give a shit who you are. I don't care what equipment hangs between your thighs, or doesn't, for this matter. What I care about is, can you do the job? Can you shoot straight? Can you move effectively? Can you communicate well? And can you do all of this under stress? Can you do all of this under fire if need be? If somebody on the team is incapacitated, shot in the leg, blown up and loses a leg, shot in the arm and can't work their weapon system effectively, are you a person, man, woman, gay or straight, black, white, Asian, Latino, whatever, doesn't matter, are you a person that can take up that position and effectively put rounds down range and continue the fight? Now, for me, this is extra important because I'm not a lightweight. I'm not a featherweight kind of guy. I'm a heavyweight kind of guy. And so my take on it is, if I'm the one that gets shot, or I get blown up and I'm unconscious, can you drag me to cover? Will you be able to render aid to me if I become incapacitated? And the answer to that question is there's certainly women and there is certainly men who cannot do that job. And so in my view, it doesn't matter either way, because if you can do those things outlined in your job description and you can meet or exceed the standard, then what do we have to complain about? Now, where I thought that ladies might get in the way is the inherent nature of men to take care of women, especially in this country. Our customs and courtesies as men in this country that we were taught, that we watched our grandfathers and hopefully our fathers and other men around us as we grew up, as we watched them treat women like ladies, I believe that those customs and courtesies and that way of thinking may bleed on into the battlefield. And then there's also the issue of extracurricular relationships. But let's not get there yet. I believe that there are a significant amount of men in the military that respect women, that will look out for women long before they will look out for themselves. And my justification for this thought process is my own experience. The first time I deployed overseas, I was on a team of all men, but we had one lady. Now, she was kind of like mom. Jen, if you ever see this, thank you for all the mom stuff that you did. But she also, she was also not about any bullshit. She was good at her job, from what I remember, and she took it seriously. Now, I will say this. If something were to happen to her while we were outside the wire, and thank God she never had any physical injuries. I don't know about her mental health. I would imagine that she's okay. I haven't heard otherwise. I believe that there were men on our team that would have been very worried. They would have sacrificed themselves possibly to take care of her. And rightfully so, because that's what we were taught as men growing up in a society where you take care of the ladies, you treat them special, you open the doors, you do this, you do that. I think that in current day society, we have moved away from that a little bit. And maybe that is something that we should be working on as a community to bring back and instill back into young men in this country. But that may be a whole nother conversation. But I will say this, that this woman, she did a hell of a job. And if I remember right, she did a pretty good job at having some snacks when we were outside the wire traveling. And she kept us on time. She checked our fuel. She did a lot of stuff for us that we probably would have forgotten to do. But then there are the extracurricular relationships, of course. You see, when you put a bunch of guys together, especially in combat roles, you tend to find units and teams that are full of a lot of alpha type personalities. And so when you start adding ladies into that mix, I believe that it subconsciously in these men breeds some kind of competition. Who's going to win over the girl? My hope is that that's not true for every team, because those are the types of things that will sacrifice mission effectiveness. But it happens. It happens everywhere. It happens in every workplace, not just the military. Everywhere you work, I'm certain that everybody watching this or listening to this has either been a part of or knows somebody who's been a part of some kind of work relationship that didn't go very well. And then it was weird at work. Or there was some drama. And there was probably potential for some entertaining arguments for those people who don't mind watching that drama. And I think we all are there at some point or another. But if we're going to add, ladies to the Selective Service in the event of a draft, why does it automatically mean that they're going to get shoved right into combat? I mean, the military has went to extensive lengths to build standards, performance measures, all these things to tell you where you fall in this game of different jobs in the military. So if a lady is drafted and she can't shoot straight, she shouldn't be in a combat role, because your main duty in a combat role is going to include something to do with shooting a weapon of some sort. And I'll also add that there are men, there are a lot of men that can't hit the broadside of a barn with an M4 rifle. I had a little small stint of teaching a little bit of marksmanship when I was in the military. And I'll tell you this, some of the ladies that I trained, I won't even say that I trained them, but helped them out with little to no experience, were easier to teach. They shot better the first time. And then those ladies that stayed in the unit that you got to know over a year or two continued to be good shots. So if we're going to just talk about, for conversation's sake, the metric of marksmanship, sometimes, in many cases, ladies are better shots than men. When you're talking about just the average everyday soldier. I mean, when we start talking about upper echelon units and Army Rangers and Force Recon Marines and things like that, of course, those guys are way better marksmen than most common, everyday, regular guy or regular girl soldiers. But I wonder why we're at this point. I wonder why this is part of the discussion. Does this have anything to do with DEI policies? Does this have anything to do with the fact that our military numbers, recruitment numbers and sustainment numbers, are they that low? And we're just not being told by the government that they're that low? And I guess that I wasn't able to find, through the research that I did, any rhyme or reason about why to add ladies. Nothing that was meaningful anyway. Nothing that sounded intelligent. But after 50 years of it being just young men who come of age, need to register, why now are we including women? And I was talking about this with a coworker of mine, who also, He also is a retired United States Army soldier. And his take on it was, well, I don't see any problem with ladies joining. There's a lot of things that anybody joining can do if they don't want to be on the front lines. There's a whole plethora of jobs. Everything from dental to medical to finance to cooks to admin to training, mechanics, IT, pilots, drone pilots. I mean, there is a whole shitload of different things that people can do when they join the service. So for the conversation to automatically go right to shoving women right into the front lines is a little silly to me. But that's the conversation that we find ourselves in. But this guy's take on it was, women are okay. But the real question is, why do the family members of politicians and the extremely rich, why do their kids get out of the draft? Why do they not have to register? Or do they? I'm not saying that there's no information out there that shows that they're excluded. But there's a whole lot of talk about how none of those people got to go. And I guess nobody really knows because we haven't had a draft in 50 years. But let's just say for conversation's sake again that the draft is initiated in 2026. And Donald Trump is the president. Let's say he wins the election and he's the president in 2026, coming up on the end of his second term. And if the draft comes, does Barron have to go? Does he have to register? Or are the family members of politicians considered good because their parents or one of their parents served as an elected government official? Does that give them immunity? I also wonder about who is signing off on this stuff. Who is directing these people to say, well, you know, you can have an exclusion. If you served in Congress, don't worry, your kids are good. But then these are also the people who don't have any skin in the game, right? Unless their children voluntarily join the military. But is there any politician that you guys can think of that their children have served while they were in politics? Maybe there is. But I'll tell you one thing. If their kids had to go, the conversations about how members of the military and veterans are treated would probably be a little bit different. If politicians had to go home or go to Thanksgiving or Christmas or birthdays or wherever and see their adult children struggling because of their service or homeless or without limbs or whatever, maybe those conversations would be a little bit different. And now I'm not here trying to say that politicians should be sending their kids into war to get maimed and killed and emotionally and physically damaged. But if their kids ended up that way, if their kids ended up in the service, if their children ended up in these places like Iraq, which is the butthole of the world, if their kids ended up there and came back different people, and they had to see this and watch this, I bet things would be a little bit different. I bet if any member of Congress, while serving, became a Gold Star parent, these conversations would be just a little bit different. You see, it's real easy for a group of politicians to make the rules about how we military people, the veteran culture and community, lead our lives when we need the help that they say is out there for us. It's really easy for them to make the rules. It's really easy for them to make it difficult for us. Would it still be that easy to make it difficult if their kids were going through it? And maybe that's what we need, folks. Maybe what we need is Gold Star mothers and fathers to run for Congress. Put them on the Veteran Affairs committees. Put them on the House Armed Services committees. Let's see how those conversations might change. Things would probably be a whole lot different. I would be willing to bet that if George W. Bush's drunk-ass daughters had to go to combat or even go to the war and be a mechanic in a motor pool while Katusha rockets come in and destroy the building that they work out of while they're underneath a truck changing the oil, I bet you the conversations about how they're taken care of, his own children, would have been a whole lot different. When information about veterans dying, waiting for care, comes to light and then proven to be true, and we have leadership who have lost their sons and daughters because they chose to give the ultimate sacrifice for this country, I bet those conversations would be a little bit different. And I bet they'd be a little bit more intense if those sons and daughters were killed or maimed or came back different and they were drafted and they didn't want to be there in the first place. I wonder how that would go. We got to take a break. We'll be right back with you. Don't go away. Hey, folks, we just have a very short break here because we're running short on time, but I wanted to talk to you quickly about joining the Stew Crew. If you have watched the network in the last few weeks, you will have probably seen this already. But if not, this will be new to you and a reminder for some. The network is growing. We are growing large. For the last 4 years, everything that we have put together, all the work we have done, has all been free to you, the watcher, the viewer. We are now at a stage where we need some help. We need some support. All of these things take resources. And so, if you would consider, joining the Stew Crew, I'm going to show you here down on the left side at the bottom left of the screen here, you're going to see this red button that's labeled Stew Crew. You can click on there and for $9 a month or $90 a year, you'll get 2 months for free. You can join the Stew Crew to get premium access to extra content. There are also other benefits such as giveaways. Stu is putting together packages of giveaways for premium subscribers. So you do receive something extra as a thank you for joining us and for your support. This is, folks, a sign of growth. But we have to keep growing. We are in the constant search for truth, and we are in the constant search of making sure that you, our viewers, are properly informed to make your own decisions about whatever the topic at hand is. So again, here at the bottom left, the Stu Crew, $90 a year, $9 a month. There's also the ability to make a one-time donation if that is what you so choose to do. You can do anything from as small as $1 all the way up to $1 million, I think is the cap. So feel free to go nuts on there, whatever you can do. It's important to mention, though, that we, of course, do not want anybody to go backwards. We don't want anybody to feel the hurt by supporting the network. We don't believe that you should have to do with less to support us. So if you can't do it, we understand. It's no big deal. We still appreciate you watching and participating in the content that is put out to you. But if you can and you won't miss $9 a month, please consider joining. Again, we are running short on time, so I'll see you back in the show. Hey, folks, welcome back here to the next segment of the show. I want to kind of switch gears here. Because I was thinking during the break, I wonder why it is that we are now having these discussions in the halls of government in Washington about drafts, whether or not to add ladies, and why they upped it a year from 18 to 25 to 18 to 26. Why did it go up? What is it that we're preparing for? I mean, we all know that this country is being infiltrated at its borders by military-age males. And it's happening to the tune of thousands per day. It doesn't seem that a whole lot of people are really talking about it. Not where it matters. We're talking about it as in the context in which we're complaining about it. But the people who sit in positions that can effectively combat this issue, because now it's not even just an issue of changing it. Now it's an issue of changing it and then fixing it and then getting the people who are here illegally out. And the problem with that is that there's thousands and thousands of illegal immigrants around here that nobody knows where they're at. Nobody knows where they went. The gotaways, they call them. But how did we get to this point? Why are recruitment and retention numbers so low that we need to extend the draft years by one whole year, which I guess in the grand scheme of things is not a whole lot, but yet they still made it bigger? And why is it a semi-hot button topic? Because it seems like when people are wandering the halls of the Longworth building, for example, on Capitol Hill, elected officials are giving answers such as, well, you know, we haven't had a draft in 50 years and maybe we should just deal with what's on our plate right now and we'll get back to that when we have time. But somebody made it a hot button issue. Hot enough for it to be on headlines. Hot enough for people to get all up in arms about the idea of women being drafted into the military and thrown into the front lines of combat. What happened in this country that our recruitment numbers are so low that we need to widen the pool for the draft and also now include ladies? I have a theory. And if you're a frequent watcher of this show, you probably know what that theory is. And I think it's real plain and simple. We have allowed the younger generations of this country to be so far disconnected from what America really actually is. They don't want to. They don't want to join. They don't want to serve. Why would anybody want to join the military and serve this country when they can, right out of high school, do other things to earn an income, a living, far greater than that of wearing the uniform of this country and proudly serving in the ranks of whatever branch of service they choose? It doesn't seem to be an honorable thing amongst youngsters any longer. Now, I will say that there are some young people out there who have ambitions to join, and they are doing that. I think we can see that if we do the research and look at the numbers and find the data. There are people that have a call to service. They hear this call to service, and then they answer. But clearly, it's not enough. It's not good enough. There's not enough people. So now we have to talk about a draft and including the women. Could it be? Is it possible that the reason that we are talking about this is because our very own leadership has sissified this country down to the studs, has sissified this country just enough that they are slowly squeezing every ounce of patriotism out of young people? Is it an issue of our politicians are engaged in issues and things around this world that are not honorable? They're not in the best interest of the people that live here in this country, that were born here, that are American citizens. I can say that if I was 19, 20, 21 years old, I was 21 when I went to basic training. But I can say that it was a pretty attractive offer. It wasn't about the money. It was more about this call to service. And I came from a family. I mean, my father was a police officer for 20-something years. And so I kind of watched him navigate his career and sacrifice a lot of things for his job. Did he sacrifice some things that would have brought his son some joy? Yeah, he did. My dad was very into being a police officer. He missed some stuff. And I silently held that against him for a long time. Until I realized what it's like. Until I finally realized what it was like to be a part of something that's bigger than yourself. once you can grasp onto this idea that there is no future without preserving the now. There is no future without securing the past, no matter how great or how horrible it may have been. And it's not just military members. It goes for police officers, firefighters, any first responder, doctors, nurses, teachers. There's a lot of occupations in this country where the people that work in them have to sacrifice a whole lot, and sometimes they miss a lot of things that are important to their family members. Was it hard? Was it hard for me to work through that without telling my father to go fuck himself? Yeah, it was. But I'm really glad that I didn't do that. Because at some point, I learned. And I had to learn and figure it out my own way. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't wish that those times that we lost together would stay that way. Maybe I wish they would have been different, of course. But when I started to understand who he is, because he's still the same today, he's just not a police officer anymore. And then when I made the decision to strap on a pair of boots and a uniform that said U.S. Army on my heart and really take it to heart and do so honorably with integrity, I understood. In the process of doing that, I lost a lot of time with my own son, which has cost me, it's cost me some things. And at times I have thought to myself, man, if I was given the opportunity to redo this whole thing called fatherhood, maybe I would have chosen a different path. But the fact of the matter is that I can't. We can't go back. We can't change what we did. We can't change the decisions that we made. But someday my son will understand who I am and why I did what I did, just like I did with my father. And those are the mentalities I think that we're missing in younger generations today. And when I rant on this show all the time about sacrifice and a moral compass and things that are bigger than ourselves and being a part of something great, that's exactly what I'm talking about. My whole Army career was great. I made lifelong friends who I consider family, but I also sacrificed a lot. I sacrificed my youth. I sacrificed my physical well-being. I sacrificed my mental health. But I would do it all over again. And I think that holds true for a lot of people, a lot of veterans. So maybe we've gone way around the block to go across the street on this one. But I think the moral of the story, the bottom line, the point to all of this is that we wouldn't be in this position, in my opinion, of having to reinstitute a draft, make the pool larger, include women. If we would have continued to keep the values and teach the real no bullshit idea of what America is and why it's important that we keep this land free and we fight for it. If we would have kept all that in the classroom, maybe it would have been a little bit different. If we would have people who are raising their kids with integrity, maybe it would be different. If we had a Department of Justice and a legal system who held people responsible and accountable for the actions that they make, and make sure that when you make a mistake or you purposely commit crime, that you sit down and you think about it and you answer for those things, maybe things would be a little bit different. But that's not what happened. Now we're here. We are where we are. As the late, great Denny Green said, they were who we thought they were. Well, we are now who we are. What do we have to do to change it? What do we have to do to change the narrative? You see, it seemed like it didn't take a whole lot of work to start to destroy the fabric of this country. But it's seemingly going to take a whole lot of work to sew it back together. And when are we going to start doing that? So yes, have women sign up for selective service. If the draft is coming, draft men and women. If we don't want to put our women in combat, then don't put them in combat. Let them fill those combat support roles. Let them work in the supply room. Let them be cooks. Let them be dentists. Let them be pilots. Let them fly drones. Let them be mechanics. Let them be chemical people. Let them be radio operators. Let them be IT people. Let them do whatever. Because if we don't remember that for every one, remember this, for every one combat soldier, it takes 5 to 7 combat service support soldiers to support that one. Your maintenance and your mechanics, if your admin people to make sure that your soldiers are getting paid and that they don't have any administrative issues, but pay is a big one. If soldiers aren't getting paid and they got families at home or they got bills to pay while they're deployed and their checks are late or not coming at all, that's a huge stressor. It's the last thing you want soldiers thinking about when they're outside the wire trying to fight a battle. We need people to feed soldiers. We need supply people to make sure we got ammo and uniforms and all the other tools and gear that we need to complete our jobs. I mean, we need the commo people to make sure our radios are working properly so we can communicate with each other. We could communicate with higher if we need help, if there's something wrong. There's all kinds. There's all kinds of positions and places for soldiers to serve. They don't have to. They don't have to be on the front lines. And let's hope that we don't get into a situation where we need all of those combat service support people to pick up a rifle and go fill those ranks in the infantry. Because then we really have a problem. What do you guys think? I think that this is it's a pretty broad topic, and I think that there's a lot of what ifs. There's a lot of things to talk about. There's a lot of scenarios to work out. But at the end of the day, if this country is in danger, if our land is at danger, and we need people in a uniform to stand a post and fight a war, we got to get them from somewhere. We can't outsource our wars. Although some people probably have an idea to do that some way, somehow, which is scary enough. But come on down in the comments. Let me know what you think, because I really would like to have this discussion. We've run out of time, though, for the day. I want to thank you, of course, for joining us. Please take care of yourselves. Have a great rest of your weekend. Good night.
We have a big problem, and this is going to continue ongoing. This is an outrage to America. You talked about law. This is a travesty to law. There is no law, because the information and money are completely controlled by a small group of people, and if you say their name, you're called an anti-Semite.
Don't
let your voice
go. Go, go.
Go, go, go.
I just don't understand how you have a country where your politicians have more allegiance to a foreign nation than they do their own. But I honestly think that we have literal treason going on right now, where Israel's interests are being put before America's interests.
Is America a sovereign nation, or are we being controlled by Israel?
People are always talking about they are out of control, they are killing us. We have to identify who the real enemy is.
The satanic Jews that control everything and mostly everybody.
What difference does it make if it's a baby or if it's an adult? It's the same thing.
There's one little nation state of Israel that everybody's afraid to talk about. It'll get you nuked off the internet. It'll scare advertisers away from doing business with you if you talk about Zionist infiltration.
Are you a Zionist?
Yes, yes.
You have to get rid of AIPAC. You have to get rid of, the Israeli control over our country. I mean, there's just no, because they clearly don't give a shit about it.
Are you part of the Jewish conspiracy? What exactly is the...
Maybe. I'm Jewish.
Those are the words that he told us that he would never use again.